Hey everyone, I just wanted to say really quick, I have a new podcast that you can listen to if you want to. It's called The Level Up Pod, together with Murph, who some of you may know from Game Nights or the Command Zone podcast. We're just talking about the video games we own, the consoles we love, and why we love collecting. You can check it out anywhere where podcasts are found. Follow us at LevelUpPod_ on Twitter. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to the Herald's Horn. On this episode, we talk about Hasbro Investor Reports, the new philosophy document for the Commander format, the Pro Tour, and some other stuff as well. Did you know that the Cowboy Bebop cards are coming to America? Of course, we have the Product Watch. We have the co-host notebook, everything you would expect from an episode. After the first half of the show, I am joined by Deco from CEDH Brazil to talk about himself, Magic the Gathering in Brazil, what's going on down there with a lack of Wizards support, and plenty more. It's a great conversation that I'm sure you'll want to listen to. If you love the show, consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some exclusive content, more coming soon, a silly little Discord, and plenty more. But of course, the main draw, at least for me, is that if you choose to use Patreon, you can directly support myself and the co-hosts. We would love to have your support as we continue working on making this show. Without any further ado, let's get into the episode. Hello, you are listening to episode number 9 of the Herald's Horn. My name is Cal Jones, and we have a great show for you today. Today, I am joined by just one co-host, and that is the wonderful Dan. What's poppin', Dan?
I saw a dude. Just chilling.
Just chilling? Just hanging?
Jay chilling, sorry.
Jay chilling? What's the difference between just chilling and Jay chilling?
I will tell you when you're younger.
I'm de-aging right now. And welcome back. As always, it has been an eventful past couple of weeks of Magic the Gathering. And by couple, I mean two, which means I used the word couple the correct way, technically. But yeah, let's jump right into it. The first piece of news that we have up on the docket, Cowboy Bebop promo cards are coming to Magic the Gathering, and most notably for the weirdest people on the internet, they are coming to you in the English language as well. These were announced first by like the MTG Japan Twitter account. They're like, hey, look at these awesome Cowboy Bebop cards. They're in Japanese because we're the Magic the Gathering Japan account. And then every single person in the world immediately jumped to the conclusion that they were going to be a very limited rare drop in Japan only for some reason. Luckily, 36 hours later, the normal Magic the Gathering, U.S. English team was like, hey, look, Cowboy Bebop cards. these cards are awesome. They're going to be available as prizes for standard showdown events at WPN stores, which is to say your local game store. These are just like Cowboy Bebop art style and character inspired treatments of cards with Magic the Gathering characters on them. I'm just going to run down the card list really quick and what date range you'll be able to get them at standard showdown events. Ossification is available August 2nd through September 19th. Disdainful Stroke is available September 27th through November 7th. Go for the Throat, November 15th through January 30th. Lightning Strike, I'm definitely going to try to get my hands on some of those. I love that card. February 7th through March 2nd. And Snakeskin Veil, April 4th through May 29. Dan, you a big Cowboy Bebop fan?
No, I want to say that I've seen it maybe a singular time back when, what was the anime program after Adult Swim was on? Toonami, yes. I definitely have seen some of the Toonami era, but was never, I'm not a huge anime person in general, so I know very little about Cowboy Bebop in general. Very stylistic, though. Very cool. I love the stylization of these cards. They look really sweet. They are not really banger cards for the most part, but like you, Lightning Strike, like thinking back on any time Lightning Strike has been in Standard, you never know how good you have it until you're playing with something awful.
Yep. I kind of just like assume that like maybe some of these cards are technically Standard legal right now. But I could be wrong about
that. Well, I would assume that they all are, but I don't know. I guess I don't know. I know Snakeskin Veil is in OTJ because I've been getting my ass kicked by it in drafts.
Oh, yeah.
Disdainful Stroke,
Ossification is in Phyrexia. All Will Be One.
Where's Lightning Strike, I guess, would be my question.
Lightning Strike is in Dominaria United, which I believe is maybe still standard legal. That's crazy.
And then Go for the Throat must be in one of the Phyrexia sets.
Almost certainly. Let's see. Go for the Throat is in the Brothers War. That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there you go. A bunch of really awesome standard legal cards available. I love the promo cards, and I love that they're doing something that is obviously going to be in such high demand. I love that they're doing it to support Standard at the LGS level. I've watched the first two episodes of Cowboy Bebop, fake anime fan. I'm sure I'll love it.
Realer than me.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll love it. I've just never gotten around to it. I've listened to the soundtrack on Spotify obsessively. If you ever want to have a great time, Dan, and also listeners, you should just check out the band Seatbelts on Spotify. It is just the band that was put together to record the soundtrack for Cowboy Bebop, and it is straight bangers top to bottom. Just like
that's how it's always been sold to me, is that the soundtrack is absolutely out of control.
The soundtrack is absolutely unreal. But like, if you don't want to listen, if you don't want to listen to the show, just like listen to Tank and Rush, and you'll power through anything you have to do for your day. Just blown out of your chair with like massive saxophones. Bah! Anyways, it's very exciting to me that something that is obviously going to be so well beloved and people are going to be so interested in it. I love that it is coming to support Standard at LGSs. I've said it before on this podcast plenty of times now. I think the healthier that Standard is, especially at a local level, the healthier that Magic the Gathering is in general.
Yeah, I think it's a really great indicator because there's so many different ways that you can judge the health of Magic and what's going on. And so many of them are so, dependent upon the culture in which they are. But like Standard, you know, like Standard is for everybody to get into, getting into it at your LGS is the place to do it for the most part. I love Standard being supported in this way. When I used to play Standard at my LGS, getting these promos, like to put them in your sideboard and everything, was the coolest. It was also like the little badge of honor that like, oh yeah, I've been here, I've been grinding some matches and stuff. And I think these will be very welcome additions to that. I'm excited to get Disdainful Stroke. I'm a huge Disdainful Stroke fan in general. So.
I'm also a really big fan of Disdainful Stroke. For whatever reason, when I was first playing Standard, I was really into Standard like 2014, 2015. And one of the best sideboard cards around then was Disdainful Stroke. And just like you said, they had an awesome Friday Night Magic promo of Disdainful Stroke. It was just like someone, I think like being killed by a dragon, just like spraying green mist all over them, and it was like, oh, your lineage will be forgotten, you are beneath contempt. And ever since like I had that awesome promo card that I won, I've always loved Disdainful Stroke. So, you know, I guess I hope that we get a new generation of people who love Disdainful Stroke, because they get an awesome new one it's like Oko on it. They get an Oko Disdainful Stroke.
That's really rad.
Yeah, Oko, like it's mirroring a really popular like Cowboy Bebop panel. I think it's pretty sick. Okay. Enough about these promos, enough about Cowboy Bebop, enough about Tank, enough about D Stroke. Let's move on to our next big news item, which is like breaking news at the time of this recording on Wednesday, aka yesterday, if you're listening to this on release day, aka a long time ago, if you're listening to this at any point beyond exactly release day. The breaking news: Hasbro released their first quarter 2024 financial results. I don't think we're going to dwell on this a super long time either. Mainly because I think the person most well equipped to talk about this, Emma, unfortunately has come down with COVID, and so she was not able to join us on this recording today. Emma, I hope you get well soon. I assume Dan also hopes you get well soon.
I, of course, am always praying on Emma's downfall because I want that jacket.
Episode you 10, want that jacket come. Before Emma?
Listen, if I can edge Emma out as competition, then it's only left of me and Lexi, and Lexi's only been on one so far. That means I get to take so many sick days.
I've been on 10. I'm not going to appear on the next 10 episodes.
Not until someone comes for the jacket title.
However, it does feel important to still cover this because, well, Hasbro is the parent company of Wizards of the Coast. I think it's been apparent to a lot of people now that Hasbro pushing for more money out of Wizards of the Coast has defined a lot of their decision making around how they handle the product, how many products they create, you know, what direction they've pushed the game in general beyond just the pure gameplay aspect. So I wanted to run through this just real quickly to check it out. So the top line is that they profited $116.2 million this year. Of course, profits that are represented in financial results are kind of fake and made up because there's so many ways they can like cook the books. The numbers that were of most interest to me, Wizards of the Coast and digital gaming, they often group those two things together, saw combined a 7% growth compared to the last quarter. The growth together with growth in all other segments was more than offset by their consumer products division being down 21%. So even though Magic continues to grow, even though they're starting to see more and more growth in like some of their digital gaming segments and some of their other business segments as well, their consumer products, which I assume is like toys, you know, the stuff that people assume Hasbro makes.
Board games.
Yeah, it's down so much that it's still their downward trajectory in their main products are still just like it's so bad that it's beating the growth in their other areas. Not great. Wizards of the Coast specifically saw 5% growth. That's like pretty moderate. We're not exactly seeing the humongous growth at Wizards compared to yesteryears that they saw right out of the gate when they started making collector boosters, started making secret lairs. You know, it seems like they have kind of found the max of what they can do. Wizards of the Coast, they are also projecting that they will lose revenue in the span of 3-5%. Compared to last year. However, their margin, aka how much profit they're making on that revenue, is anticipated to go up. Classic business. Revenue loss, they didn't say why they anticipate revenue loss. I personally anticipate it's from Murders at Karlov Manor being a bit of a flop as far as standard set goes. And of course, they will also not have Lord of the Rings Universes Beyond to like boost their sales into the stratosphere this year. Modern Horizons 3 very well may take that spot, but how Modern Horizons 3 performs will be a big deal.
I think that like it'll definitely take up a big chunk of that big number, but like Lord of the Rings being able to appeal to so many people outside of Magic, I think is going to be a huge difference.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings was like next level, like God tier sales crossover appeal. You know, that set was popular in a way we've never seen a Magic set be popular before.
Modern Horizons 3 is going to change Magic as Modern Horizons continually does.
Yep.
But only for the people who already play Magic exactly. And who are pretty invested in it too. Like yes. It's not going to change it for, as I like to say, like the average player who is like just a person who plays at their kitchen table and doesn't log on to twitter.com.
Yep. You know, they might, if they're plugged in enough to even realize like newer cards that exist, then you will just not, you might, you know, find one new card in Modern Horizons 3 or whatever, which is real different than it changing up the entirety of a format. Anyways, in classic business fashion, the kind of the theme of the report is that even though their business and revenue is net down, profits are up because of, quote, the company's transformation, reduced operating cost, and favorable business mix, which pretty much all adds up to we laid off a lot of people at the end of last year to save money. Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, and like we talked about with like all of the art issues that we've had over the year, like clearly there is like a lot of pressure being put on the people, on the ways that they are spending their money, and ways that things seem to be like very rushed and taken care of like as cheaply as possibly.
Of course, rounding out the report, they list kind of some of their priorities for the business year of 2024. It proudly lists return cash to shareholders through the dividend. Of course, the dividend is the share of profits that every single shareholder, people who own stock in a company, receive. Depending on how a company is set up, a lot of profits might get immediately reinvested to the company. A lot of profits may get returned to shareholders rather than like being used to further the company or its employees in any way. Hasbro is definitely one of the former. They're a very like shareholder focused company. And so they focus on distributing as much as their profits as possible to out to shareholders. This like, and it's also not surprising that they list this as one of their like priorities, because this is an investor's report. You know, this is a report that will mostly be read by, besides sickos like me, this is a report that will mostly be read by and interesting to people who own stock in Hasbro. Do we have any Hasbro investors on the call?
Hello. Yeah, I own one stock in Hasbro.
Are you happy with the performance, sir? Are you happy with the performance of Hasbro?
I think it's great. Yeah, I think it's awesome.
Obviously, this kind of focus is not that surprising from a business, but however, I think these kind of things just kind of prove to me how like broken business is. Hasbro put so much time and effort. They put so much time and effort into making so many products that don't work and don't sell. They make so much of their money pretty much almost entirely on the back of Wizards of the Coast at this point. It's like one of their only profitable segments. And they made $116.2 million in profit this quarter, right? Using whatever tricks they had to claim that. However, they still managed to pay out $97.2 million to their investors in one quarter. So whatever money they made that could have been profit, $97 million of it was paid out to investors that could have been used to reinvest in the company, that could have been used to retain more talent to make the same level of magic cards, but like better. I could also be entirely misrepresenting how this works against their profit. However, look, $97 million in a quarter is a lot of money to pay out to investors. And I feel like Hasbro is one of those companies that could definitely benefit from, rather than being like bled dry from all these people who own their stock, I feel like they could really benefit from actually like doubling down and reinvesting in like finding new products, supporting Wizards of the Coast better, you know, paying other companies to make more video games so they could maybe have more hits like Baldur's Gate 3. That hasn't worked out for them historically. Baldur's Gate 3 was a real outlier. Just the number of like $97.2 million paid out to shareholders in one quarter is just like jokerifying to me. I simply feel like they could be using, they should, I feel like they could be using that money in a different way.
Well, especially if we're looking at the net profit being $116 million, like that's less than $20 million that they're keeping after that. And yeah, like we've discussed every single episode so far, there are more than one problems going on at Wizards of the Coast headquarters that could be dealt with. And not to mention that we're talking about all of Hasbro here. We haven't even delved into the problems that what the hell do they make? Monopoly? Candyland? Candyland's got some problems.
It's not Monopoly.
Candyland needs some
updating. Hasbro board games. I'm Googling it right now. Oh, they do make Monopoly. I'm in shambles.
I knew they must do Monopoly. I'm guessing on Candyland. I couldn't name a third board game.
Clue. Yahtzee. I
probably should have guessed that one.
It is just like so unreal to me when I have opened like the Hasbro board game page. It's just like pages and pages and pages of like spam Yahtzee. Who is this for? Why did they spend like, time licensing money,
so antiquated
production, and like shelf space in stores, which they probably pay for, on spam Yahtzee? How
not a single Fortnite crossover amongst the bunch.
How much dead stock do you think they have sitting around for Bob's Burgers Clue?
I was thinking about this the entire time that we were talking about like this profits and losses, that like there are all of these, like every single one of these games has a million different like Bob's Burgers, Star Wars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're all narrowed down into such incredibly niche subjects. And just thinking about the warehouses, the store spaces, all of these, all of this place that takes up physical space where they have to keep these boxes that are all sealed and we're never going to sell to anyone. Like, imagine the metaphorical shelf life of a Bob's Burgers Monopoly game. Like, how quickly does the fanfare die over for that? Like, sure, people are still fans of Bob's Burgers, but also, you know, there's that January 6th guy on the cast. So I imagine the demand for it is a lot lower than it once was.
Wait, I was just sitting here talking smack about licensed products at Hasbro, but boy, I just found Monopoly One Piece and my wallet is on fire. they made it for me, Dan.
If they got a Hello Kitty Island Adventure one, I'll pick
they
one up.
Probably do.
I hope so.
I think they owned the toy rights to Hello Kitty, so it's like free for them. Anyways, I think this concludes Dan and Cal's attempt at making a relatively well-informed Hasbro first quarter analysis.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. This was great.
I hope you enjoyed.
Thank you, caller, for calling
in. I hope
in.
You enjoyed your 60 cents of dividends this quarter.
Oh, my God, I'm swimming in it.
All right, get off the phone, please. I don't know why we started taking live callers on a recorded podcast.
Let's move on. Okay, this has
product.
No, this has nothing to do with buying cards. One of our news pieces from last week rather than this week would be something that I think is quite monumental from my perspective, and that is that the Commander's Rules Committee rolled out a new philosophy of Commander document. If you have gone on the Commander official website before, if you looked around, you'll have found a philosophy of Commander document. The last one was like fine. It did like an okay job, I think, of explaining what Commander is, what it's about, what the goals of the Rules Committee are, and that kind of stuff. However, I think what it was much better at doing was being slightly antagonistic on accident and explaining a lot of what Commander wasn't rather than what it was. Mm-hmm. And also, it didn't actually give like the Rules Committee a lot of directive beyond like saying there's a Rules Committee and that kind of stuff. So we have a brand spanking new philosophy document that explains what EDH is, what the goals of the Rules Committee are. I think that's a really important thing, like for me. It gives the Rules Committee a framework upon to act, focusing on three pinnacles of what EDH aims to be. They say that EDH is social, EDH is creative, and EDH is stable. I'm excited for this to be here because in my interview with Jim earlier this year, I believe on episode one of the podcast, he stressed the importance of getting their ducks in a row in these kind of more like, I don't want to say like bureaucratic ways, but like they're making documentation. They're establishing what they're doing, mm-hmm. why they're doing it, all that kind of stuff. He really wanted to get their ducks in a row in that regard so they could be properly aimed and guided in their actions. I think a lot of the past actions of the Rules Committee have seemed random to people and often viewed as like misguided or vindictive because there wasn't like a guiding document. It was just like the Rules Committee being like, yeah, we think EDH is like this. And everyone was like, well, that's not written down anywhere. So stuff like this gives them a solid framework to work under and from. And I think that is a great step forward in having like more focused, purposeful action from the Rules Committee moving forward. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it's a very necessary and needed update because, again, talk about the average Magic player who like probably has never seen the RC's website or really heard about it all. Like, hopefully that this is like getting out into like the Magic spheres a little bit more. More people are looking at it. Hopefully. I don't know if that's true, but definitely necessary for an update because like, yeah, to the average player who doesn't really know what the RC does or is, if you're just playing EDH at your local gaming store and then all of a sudden you're like playing a card and one day your friend is like, oh, Hullbreacher got banned. And you're like, what? When did that happen? I don't understand why. It's very easy to not understand why for a lot of different cards. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they did, I'm really glad about is like the links to the different articles throughout the website and throughout different forums forums where they have talked about why they're banning things, I think is really important, because that is the sort of information that gets lost extremely easily when all of these conversations tend to happen in different places and over so many years.
Yeah, I think specifically that project too was another great job. It is kind of funny because that like does also, I think that caused some like blowback on the rules committee because like
everything is inevitably going.
Well, yes, because that I think that the creating of the explanations for why cards are banned, like that project, it did kind of, I think, unfortunately, bring into like the light how bad some of the reasoning for some of the cards was at the time. But now, like the criteria for unbanning of a card is not exactly like, oh, was the original thing good? It's like, is unbanning it actually plus EV? And
yes, that's the thing I think that people don't understand is like bans and unbans are made on the idea of whether or not this improves EDH as a playable atmosphere. Like, does this make the average player's experience better or worse?
Yep.
And like, sure, people can play around Hullbreacher, but does it make anyone's experience of the game better? No.
I wouldn't, bro. Hullbreacher made for some of the most miserable games of both competitive and casual Magic the Gathering I have ever played in my life.
As a person who has breached many wheels, I have never had a time where I was closer to quitting playing CDH because I hated that.
It's just like, okay, my 7 cards can't win the game, even though I have 30 treasures. Guess we're going to be here for another 2 hours. Boo.
Big boo. Big boo for that.
So I am interested specifically like on the topic of the ban list and this new pillar that they've called out for EDH stable. In their explanation of the stable in particular, they kind of said that they weren't going to make bans or unbans just to like shake things up. Like you kind of have started to see in some of the more competitive formats in Magic the Gathering. And it seems that some people have started kind of calling for that for EDH. They're like, oh, the format's so boring. We're only getting 2,000 new cards every 3 months.
I don't understand this perspective.
I don't, bro. It's so boring. Please unban one card. Bro, please just ban Command Tower. It's so boring, dude. I don't exactly understand that either. I understand it a little more like from the competitive EDH standpoint. Like if we were a competitive format that was being balanced for, then yeah, I would certainly ban some cards. But we're not. We're a casual format that is now explicitly focused on creating a social, a creative, and stable environment. It's nice that we can say that now. That's the focus. Thanks, new rules philosophy document that we're talking about right now. And I think if something doesn't like check one of those boxes, then it probably won't come off the ban list. But what I was saying specifically about the stable part, I will find it interesting to see how often that gets like wielded positively or negatively to like keep the ban list without much change. Cause it like that has historically been, I think, one of the strengths of being able to keep EDH a pretty casual, low investment format is that if you are even locked in enough to know about the ban list and follow the ban list, you don't really have to worry about keeping up with it that much because it changes like once every 2 years, which is and usually only when it's kind of perceived as absolutely have to. I know like the Golos ban or whatever was pretty suspect, and I would still kind of agree with that. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what the future of Commander looks like now that we have this format philosophy document going on. I know that a lot of people think that it is going to be more of the same. I personally think this is going to be a tool that is usable to make less of more of the same. Because the old was acting in the views of many relatively arbitrarily and randomly. And now hopefully it'll be with some form of backup from this document, at least. I don't know. I think I'm rambling, Dan.
Yeah. I hope that people gain a better understanding of what EDH is for and why it is maintained through this document, because I think that they do spell it out pretty clearly. I recently have been canceled on Twitter because I said that people can do whatever they want in EDH. There are no EDH cops. Sheldon Menery, his ghost will not rise and come into your house and steal your cards from you if you play a channel or something. And one person replied to me and they said, I've been playing EDH for 2 years and I barely know that the rules committee exists, and they're poising it as a bad thing. But I, in my mind, I'm like, well, that sounds like a great thing. It sounds like everything has been going fine for the past 2 years and hasn't really needed a big change up. Like 2 years ago is probably just about the whole Breacher ban, I would bet, or just like thereafter. And yeah, like EDH has been fine. It has been stable and the other adjectives that we were striving for it to be.
Yep, exactly. However, I still think that they should unban, I was trying to come up with a random obnoxious card, but I...
Well, you say Golos is sus.
I do think Golos is kind of sus, but that's a larger conversation around the fact that I don't think the signpost banning model is effective at all, specifically because since we are such a low investment casual format, people, I don't think, really can be inspected to put in the mental work or... wider format knowledge to even know that they're to be expected to view the ban list as a bunch of signposts that are then supposed to inform what cards they select past that point. So I think like Golos is just kind of like sitting on there. Like, sure, he was a really popular commander, but okay, it's not my problem if people aren't that inventive. They can like do that with plenty of five color commanders anyway. So
sure. Yeah. In my mind, I think that Golos was needlessly overpowered, and I can understand it from that perspective that for the average EDH player, like if you are going to your local FNM to play EDH, or not your FNM, but you know, whatever EDH night is, if you're going up against like two or three Golos decks a night, because everyone's got a Golos deck as they did in those days, that can be kind of miserable, boring. And I can understand that perspective.
Yep. Certainly. All right. Well, we have talked about the new philosophy of Commander. Dan and I have jumped into our own philosophies of Commander a little bit, but I think that's enough on that topic. So let's move on to our final news topic of the day, which is a little bit of a shorter one, and that is that Pro Tour Outlaws of Thunder Junction is this weekend, April 26th to 27th. Pro Tour season is my favorite season of Magic, no matter what, even if I'm not very engaged in the formats, even though I have historically never been that... interested in like playing limited myself, there is nothing better to me than watching the best of the best just play games of Magic all weekend long while I get to listen to commentators tell me what I'm missing. I love Pro Tour weekends, especially now that we get so little like super high quality coverage of Magic, like weekend long Magic events, compared to what we used to. I'm always fiending for Pro Tour weekend. This weekend is both Outlaws of Thunder Junction draft and standard for day one and two. And then the top eight is just going to be standard. It is also like closer to the release date of Outlaws of Thunder Junction than the last couple of Pro Tours have been. So people have less time to prepare, which I think is pretty exciting because I think that really helps reward people that like really have put in the work for the last couple of weeks, testing out both limited and getting a chance to try to implement new cards from Outlaws into their decks to find the best stuff. You big Pro Tour fan, Dan?
Yeah, I am always a big fan of it, especially like you said, where this is being so close to release. Like, I'm really excited to see the creativeness of what people are coming up with for this. I know that there are a couple of like really hot cards from the new set that people are going to be hot on. The Kiln Fiend, the Flying Kiln Fiend with haste. Oh, boy.
The Flying Kiln Fiend, I think it would be hard for that to not dominate the weekend. That card is just crazy.
I know it's popping off in Pioneer already, and I think some of the other Eternal formats are pretty excited about it as well, and for good reason. And yeah, I think it's going to be a very powerful environment both in draft and in standard. I'm really excited to see the draft portion of it as well. It's been a really fun draft environment, especially with all of the various sheets that are in there. Not a lot of the vault cards are all that great in limited, but some of them are wild bangers.
Have you been jamming a lot?
Yes, I have played a lot of OTJ limited over the past I guess week or so.
Nice.
Have not done very well. It is a difficult draft environment. Yeah, but it's one that I love a lot. It asks you to draft a lot of different colors to pay attention to lands. And that's something that I think is like a very rewarding draft environment.
Because it has like the desert duels. They're at common, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty slick. I always like fixing at common in the limited environments that I've gotten really into. This seems to be a common thread between them is some decent fixing.
Sorry, you scared me. I've never heard a joke before.
those ones in particular seem really strong too, because not only are they duels, but they also deal a damage, which is not insignificant, and they also very relevantly commit a crime.
Yeah, the committing a crime aspect of it is so hugely relevant to so many of the cards in Limited. And it's really funny where like one of the best cards that you can get if you're like drafting red, for instance, is a 2-mana common that you pay one and tap it and it pings an opponent for one. It's just like wildly good.
Yeah, so many of commits a crime on a stick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems good to me. So if you are into competitive Magic, or even if you are not and you have like never watched a Pro Tour before, I would definitely recommend tuning into the @Magic Twitch account, the Magic Twitch account this weekend, to watch Pro Tour Outlaws of Thunder Junction. They do an excellent job. Watching people good at Magic play at the highest possible stakes is always a great time, and I would highly recommend it. So, speaking of Outlaws of Thunder Junction, the newest Magic the Gathering set, it's time for us to move into the Product Watch.
Product Watch.
No products have come out in the last 2 weeks for us to talk about. That concludes the Product Watch.
Product Watch.
All right, so since we are through the Product Watch, we are going to move on to our other recurring segment, and that is the co-host's notebook. Welcome to the co-host notebook.
Co-host notebook.
Welcome to the co-host notebook, the part of the show where we talk about, well, whatever the co-hosts want to talk about. This week, we only have one co-host, so much like this week, we had a short Product Watch. We might have a short co-host's notebook this week, too. Dan, what have you written down in your co-host's notebook?
As is tradition, I have not written anything on our shared Google document because I want it to be a surprise. And of course, I'm here again to talk about the latest installment of Skibbity Toilet. No, I've been up to a whole lot. Honestly, I've been pretty unplugged for the past couple of weeks. Haven't been doing a lot of Magic stuff. Haven't been streaming. Have just been keeping up with my work for my clients who are the other MTG people in my life. I've been doing a lot of hiking, which has been really great. It was Store Day last weekend.
Ooh,
didn't get anything new.
Okay.
It's a
good excuse to go out and just be at a record
store. I'll always go.
Even
and
if
just
you don't
like,
get any of the exclusives or whatever.
Yeah, no, the exclusives this year, not for me. There's a lot of copies of an exclusive Pearl Jam record, but I'm not a big Pearl Jam guy. Yeah, no. I did get a really great copy of Ice Cube's Death Certificate, an original pressing of that for $15. So very solid. Very happy with that one.
That's sick.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, I've been super unplugged, been spending a lot of time outside. It's starting to get a lot warmer in Philly and spending as much time in the woods as I can.
Nice. Well, we love to hear it. I too have been I've been outside a lot, but I've been in my mid-American city, weird inner city suburban backyard, surrounded by the mosquitoes. I bought a smoker.
That's cool.
Been smoking meats. So
You went to the WWE.
Yeah, I went to the WWE this last Monday, took friend Blake, who bought me the WWE stock, and also took co-host of the show, Lexi. It was their first wrestling event. She's been interested in getting into it.
Just the one picture. Just like arms up with mouth wide open. Yeah. Like, wow, Lexi's having the greatest time.
Lexi had the time of her life. Like, we were leaving and Lexi was like, that is the best time I have ever had. Was sitting and then it's like we were there for 4 hours. It's a long night. And Lexi was hyped the whole time. So I think it's safe to say that the WWE is for Lexi the next day.
How much of it is like show production stuff? Is it like a really like clean experience for you as an audience member, or how does it look?
I would say for an audience member, especially in where they usually do it in Columbus, the Schottenstein Center is a basketball arena. It's the Ohio State basketball arena. And like, there's no bad seat in that house. Cause it's like an arena, but it's not a huge arena. And like, they don't play the commentary, like from the commentators that they usually hear on TV. They don't like play that over the like speakers or anything. Cause I assume it would interfere with the mics and they'd have problems with the show, you know? And it is kind of weird that they do everything facing away from where the bulk of the audience is, to where the hard cam is. The hard cam like faces the bulk of the audience. It's what's called the hard cam. It's like the main camera shot they use a lot of the time. It faces towards the big audience because they usually don't like fill the whole stadium. They cut off like a third of it kind of behind where the hard cam is. And so like a lot of the time the wrestlers are like playing to the camera or like it's talking on the mic. They're facing away from you, which is a little bit of a weird experience. But otherwise, it's just kind of like you're at a wrestling show. It's a good time. Everyone chants and there's a lot of chanting and cheering and it's a whole lot for everyone to do. So it's a fun time. And during the commercials, they just do dumb stuff with the audience. It's just like, oh, one of the commentators is going to get on the mic and talk about how bad Michigan is. And everyone goes, woo, you know, that kind of stuff.
I like that.
It's just that kind of stuff. That's cool. Just some of the funny appeals about wrestling. Like the bad guy comes out and he's like, man, how long has it been since Michigan beat Ohio State beat Michigan in the big game? And everyone's like, boo.
That's so funny. I love that. That's a great way to keep things going.
Exactly. It's just like just that kind of fun stuff. So, yep. Went to wrestling. Had a good time. Took Lexi. I'm sure if Lexi would have been able to join us on this episode, which they were originally planning on, and then work, yada, yada, you know.
And then I was like, if you think you're coming for that fucking jacket, Lexi.
I'm getting you. I'm sure if Lexi was on this episode, he would have talked about wrestling. So that's a stand-in for Lexi. That's what's in Lexi's co-host notebook and is also on my mind ever since Monday Night Raw in Columbus, Ohio.
And Emma is messing with her cube quite a bit. I know that she's taken some time to try out some different slots in the peasant cube and also playing some Stardew Valley.
Wow. All right. Well, that is everyone's co-host notebook. Before we sign off, Dan, as always, do you have anything else to leave our listeners with?
Hey, I'm still on the line. Baba Booey, Baba Booey.
buy Hasbro stock. Buy Hasbro stock. You want to buy it and pump it so bad.
No, if you haven't read the new philosophy document, if you're a fan of EDH, I would suggest going to check it out. It is a pretty cool upgrade. I don't think we mentioned it, but I do think that this is the truth, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is something that Jim started working on with Sheldon before his passing.
Yeah, like 2 years ago. Jim's been cooking on it for a while.
Yeah, yep. It's been a very long and arduous process getting it published and correct and everything. So yeah, definitely worth checking out. And
I will link it in the podcast description.
Enjoy your local flora and fauna. It's beautiful outside.
Go hiking. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, it's me again, Cal. I hope you're really enjoying this episode. If you are really enjoying it, consider joining the Brass Section and supporting us on Patreon. For just $5 a month, you can help me pay my bills and also the bills of the co-hosts. You'll gain access to our supporter exclusive show, Heraldic Banter, and you'll also get unceremoniously tossed into our Discord. Check out the link now in the podcast notes to toss us a few bucks. We really appreciate it. And welcome back. I am joined today by Deco, the self-described ugly face of CEDH Brazil. Deco, how are you doing? Thanks for joining me today.
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having the time to hear about CEDH Brazil, about myself, and about Brazil here as well.
Of course, of course. So Deco, I wanted to know really quick first, this is a Magic the Gathering podcast. The question that I ask everyone first, which I think everyone asks first on every CDH podcast, is how did you get into Magic the Gathering?
Okay, so I'm not quite sure when, but I think I played one game or two when I was a kid, and then I never played again. I didn't even know that much about the game. So basically, how I got into was I always seen the products. I'm a huge nerd, so of course it brought my attention to the products. And once I was walking in the street, and I entered an LGS looking for comics. And I saw some people playing. I asked a couple questions, and they invited me to show up. But I never had any decks or anything. Skip forward a couple of months later, I bought my first Magic product, which was the Journey into Nyx event deck and Battle of Terrors, I think, or something like that. It was two event decks, modern event decks, I think it was called, or event decks, I don't know. And I bought two, one for myself, one for my brother, and we started playing. And after that, I went back again on the LGS, say, okay, now I have a deck. And they said, okay, but your deck does not play what most people are playing, which is Commander. So why don't you build a Commander deck? So I pretty much just started with Commander.
You started with Commander?
Yeah.
Well, when around was this?
It was 10 years ago.
Okay, starting with Commander 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I was about to say, like, Commander wasn't that popular 10 years ago, but I think it was, actually. It's like 2014, pretty popular.
Yeah, it's not what it is now, but it was growing, and it was like, and it still is, of course, the main format for casual play, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. It's the main format for most Magic play these days, it seems
Yes. Nowadays, exactly. Yes. But back then, it was the main format for casual play.
Certainly. And, okay, so you started playing Commander around 2014, and then what? You just kept playing Commander?
Yeah. So basically, I started started brewing two decks at the same time because, of course, every Magic the Gathering player cannot build only one deck. So I set my eyes into a Kalia deck, but it was more expensive than I could afford at the time. It was, I mean, no reserved list or anything, but I was on a budget myself. So I before I completed building Kalia, I built a Bruna, the Light of Alabaster deck.
Yeah.
And what is interesting is I actually won my first game of Commander, but it was like pretty much out of nowhere. My deck was a little piece of and people just kept killing each other. It was like a mm-hmm. six-player game. pretty much casual. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, I had like a bunch of counter spells, and I was like pretty much time walking the other player. So they, tap everything, spell, counter. Okay, goes to my turn, attack. And after like three or four turns like this, they gave up. So so it was pretty much this. But I mean, there were some pretty good decks at that pod. There was like a Jaria, the Suspend Jaria, with all the mana rocks and everything. It was like top of the art, the Suspend Jaria. But the players just kept focusing themselves. So yeah, and then. After that, of course, I got my Kalia deck. Some people didn't like to play against, so because, of course, you have all the Kalia combos with Master of Cruelties and stuff. And I started slowly to realize that I liked playing good cards. Mm-hmm. And I liked winning. Mm-hmm. So... A couple of years.
I feel like this is the path that every CEDH player takes.
Yeah. a couple of years later, about the end of 2015, start of 2016, pretty much when we start getting the partners as well. I started hearing about CDH. I say, oh, and so is this a thing? Yeah, I think I like it. So, and then people pretty much at the same rate started realizing they like to play with powerful stuff as well. So we're all into the same thing. So it was fun.
So you got into more powerful Magic the Gathering, and like I said up at the top, and I'm sure as I said in the glorious way I'm going to introduce you before I play all of this audio, you are and have been for quite a while now a member of the YouTube channel content creation team, has done a lot of stuff over time, CEDH Brazil. Obviously, what CEDH Brazil is kind of in the name. Some Brazilian people focusing on CEDH in Brazil. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So just to complement the time lapse, so our group here in our city, which is São Paulo, is the largest city from Brazil. We started playing a lot, and there were some other groups being created in different cities. What happened is Matheus, which is the original creator from CEDH Brazil, he created a group in the Facebook called CEDH Brazil, and it was just a Facebook group. And at the same time, I had created a group for CEDH on Facebook as well. And then I just message him and say, hey, why do we have two groups? I think if we have only one, it's better, like, because the information would be all in the same place. He pretty much agreed. And this was still only on Facebook. And skip forward to the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. We started planning creating some content on video, mostly doing lives on Twitch. And then, of course, the pandemics came. So it wasn't planned because of the pandemics, but I think due to the pandemics, people were at home and they had nothing to watch, and they started watching us playing CEDH, and then it became what we are now.
That is pretty awesome. You know, I think it is kind of wild to me that, like, right around that time that y'all were kind of like figuring out, oh, we're into CEDH, oh, we enjoy CEDH, almost like at the exact same time, probably fairly independently, that was just like happening up here in the States, like at the same time, like CEDH was gaining popularity everywhere all at once, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, we have the OGs of content creation. We have the Lab Maniacs, so they were starting, and then a couple months or a year later, playing with Power came, and the other guys. So yeah, I think globally CEDH grew as one.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of awesome. I don't know if there's many other ways about playing Magic that you can say that about. I think that's pretty cool. So what is CEDH Brazil now? You know, I know y'all used to make a lot of YouTube content. You don't as much anymore. I know you guys run some pretty huge online tournaments, right?
Yeah.
I know you do it. I don't know much about it because you post about it in Portuguese and I do not speak Portuguese. So can you tell me about the tournaments a little bit?
Sure. So first, now, we went from a group of 10 plus people involved, and life happened. Some people needed more time with their families. Some people needed more time to work. And it's nobody's fault, really. We didn't fight or there was anything like that. So now, currently, who is more working on CEDH Brazil is myself and Killstars. Of course, most of the people should know Killstars. He's very active as well in the CDH community, especially in international events, more than myself. And we are doing what we can because, of course, life happens for everybody. Yeah. I'm working more. He's working more. And we are doing what we can. So we have plans to continue with the channel, continue with the content creation. But we are very focused now on what we can execute without spending much time, which is tournaments. So we are running some tournaments in the LGS. We are running some tournaments in online via Spelltable. And we are running both CDH and budget CDH. Okay. And talking about the big online tournaments that you mentioned, there's something called CDH 500, which is basically CDH decks costing 500 Brazilian reais. Okay. And why is that? There was an event back in 2021, I think, late 2020, beginning of 2021, which was created by another content creator in Brazil, very famous, called Markovis. And he was doing a budget commander event online with, like, I think it was 150 Brazilian reais, so very, very low budget. And he was more focused on casual, so it was not his idea to have, like, a competitive event. But when I heard about it, and it had, like, great attendance, it was, like, 80 players or something, I contacted him, and I proposed that we create something that's more middle term between CDH and budget view, and we got to the 500 Brazilian reais. It's hard to port the CDH 500 Brazilian reais to US dollars because there are some price differences between local markets. More or less 500, it means 100 US dollars, but when we get to the, like the prices on Moxfield, it's never 100, 150, 200, or and I mean there are a couple of things to consider price wise. But here in Brazil, what we did? Okay, so you Markov has done 150. And he agrees on doing the 500. So, yeah, we started organizing an event called Commander 500, which is basically a budget CDH. And the thing is, this first event got 225 persons, 225 people working.
That's quite a few.
Or playing on the event. Yeah. And we... it was like the very first event. So we were like, what the heck? Why are these people interested in this kind of event? So yeah, it worked pretty well. Keenan won the first one. Of course, Keenan is very good on a budget. And then we started planning the next one. And the next one, we had 275. Online.
So it's like 50 more?
Yes, 50 more via Spelltable. Nice. I mean, as we say this because we are proud of this, but as far as I'm concerned, is the largest online EDH event.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, if anybody knows larger, please go ahead and tell me. There's no problem. But as far as I'm concerned, it's the largest online. And then we had the third, on the second, it was like a Nimris control list with Tassos Oracle. And then the third, we had like 250. It was a Chimna and Thrasios list, very good as well. And now we just had the fourth. The difference between the fourth is that we charged named Trifi, which we haven't for the other ones.
The other ones, yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty much like LGS supporting the event, and we putting some money from ourselves on the prizes. And the fourth one, we did an entry fee. However, the entry fee was not to support the prizes. It was to support a foundation for LGBTQ people who are in need. So it was pretty good. We raised a good amount of money. We donated everything to this foundation. And the prizes, of course, it came from our pockets and for LGSs as well. But the difference is that it was a little bit lower on player participation. It was 130, but it was pretty good. And it just ended last month.
That's pretty good for going from free to some amount of entry. That's a pretty great result still for attendance. Yeah.
Yeah. And meanwhile, these are the big events that we put the most effort. But meanwhile, we are always organizing events with like 16, 32, 20 plus players on a monthly basis. So, yeah. So this is where we are now. We are mostly focused on organizing events. We still want to get back to content creation, focus more on content creation, but it takes more time, especially to edit, to do the post work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I talked a lot. Sorry.
That's the ideal. Even the more you talk, the less I have to talk, and I'm not very good at talking. So, So, okay, so now you're running these tournaments. This is quite successful tournaments. I think it's one of the very frustrating parts about the Magic the Gathering community is that like a lot of what's going on in different countries is not very accessible or celebrated, specifically, especially in the United States, mainly because nobody in the United States, a lot of people in the United States like only speak English. Which then locks them out of seeing a lot of what else is going on, which like, and nobody should post stuff exclusively in Spanish people shouldn't post stuff exclusively in English just so that people in the US can access it.
Yeah. And then there's one funny thing that happens whenever I post anything in English.
Yeah.
People ask me, why are you speaking English? Because you're... Your public is Brazilian, so so there's kind of a conflict.
Oh, for sure,
a conflict for of sure. Audience.
No, yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. Yeah, your audience is largely Brazilian, so obviously you will then post in Portuguese. So yeah, that makes sense. Well, it's awesome to hear about all of that stuff. I wanted to shift gears a little bit, past talking about just you and talking about just CDH Brazil. And maybe see what insight you have into the greater state of things in Brazil. So like some context for people who are going to be listening. As I'm sure if you're really plugged into the Magic sphere, you already know that Wizards of the Coast recently announced that like amongst a couple other languages, but mainly Chinese Simplified and Portuguese, they're very soon stopping support for those languages for printed Magic cards. Portuguese is still going to be supported in Arena, which I thought was kind of weird, but this kind of is like a double down on stopping to support Brazil meaningfully from Wizards of the Coast, because they used to have like an office and some amount of community managers and all that kind of stuff in Brazil. And then in February of 2023, I believe, they kind of unceremoniously like shut down that office and fired everyone and basically stopped all community support and very specific support to like all of Latin America in general. But obviously that by player population kind of impacts Brazil the most. How would you say the community in Brazil is reacting to these changes? Cause like I know in reading the post, it just like reads as, you know, the announcement, they like tried to be like diplomatic about it and stuff. But even the ways they were being diplomatic about it, it was like, our data shows that even in the places where people speak Portuguese, which they're just not saying Brazil, people usually just buy English cards anyway. Is that true?
So you covered pretty much the main points on why the Brazilians, they are angry with Wizards of the Coast. So there is the office that was closed. We had a community manager. She was like pretty good at her job. And now we have pretty much no one to talk to, content creators, especially because, of course, LGS, they have their contacts. They can get easily in touch with Wizards because, of course, they are part of the network. Yes. But for content creators, we had this person. Now we don't. So what I heard from some other people is that they get more and more or they get less and less enthusiastic into creating content. Of course, they do it for the community, but there's almost no support. So this is one
point.
It's
a lot harder to be enthused when there isn't support from the top.
Yeah. So this is one point. Going back before that, we had the Grand Prix in Brazil, the Magic Fest or whatever. We pretty much don't have it here anymore. I know that I think it was organized by Channel Fireball before. Now it's kind of different. I'm not that much into the details, but it's also something that it was very good for the community. Everybody got in the same place. People traveled states to go to the fest, as it is in the U.S. As I see the community in the U.S. doing that, and we miss that in Brazil. We miss that. We do not have that, at least on that level. We did have the Commander Fest for the last 2 years, 3 years, or two of the last 2 years. We had it the first time it was in 2022, and last year we had it, but it was way, way, way smaller than what the Magic Fest was. So we miss this kind of events together to know more people that played, to know more people that create content, to get in touch with the community. And this is also something that we do not have at the level that we had one day. And finally, going on the products. I mean, most of the Magic players do speak English at some level on here in Brazil. But Brazil is a country where not everyone speaks English. And I mean, when I say not everyone, I say most of the population does not speak English. It's still, we are still growing with that. We're still like putting English in the schools and everything, but it's not that perfect. So I'm not worried about the current player base. I think the current player base, they will continue to play English, to play Magic with English cards. I'm worried about the new player base. I'm worried about the player base that could have been the guy that goes to a store and wants to buy a product for his kid, and the product is in English. His kid does not speak English, and it's hard. It's hard. Of course, it's all part of a gathering of events that makes the Brazilian community less and less happy with how Wizards of the Coast is dealing with the Brazilian community now. Okay. So, yeah, the reactions on the internet, I think they were appropriate, even though they like step over the level, but I think it was necessary. We needed to be heard. There was something called Vampetaço. I'm not sure that you saw it, but when it was first announced, the community in Brazil, they got a photo from a Brazilian footballer way older that was like the first player to ever pose on a pose nude on a magazine, and they started like posting this player pictures on the comment with like a sensor on his parts. A lot of messages for Wizards of the Coast.
I saw that, and the sensor was usually like the Portuguese version of the card, greed.
Yes, yes.
I saw that. I was confused.
Yeah.
I got the message with the greed. I was surprised as to where the footballer came into it.
Yeah. I mean, we have our own ways to react to things, and we are very into memes. So it was like, okay, let's show them who we are.
So, I definitely did see that. I know, like it like got so bad that Wizards like turned off their replies on
and whenever
Twitter for a long time.
And yeah. It was like 1 or 2 months ago, and even now when Wizards like leave their comments open, we still see lots of Brazilian getting there and commenting for sure. on that.
Deco, how do you personally feel about these changes?
I do not like it. I do not like it at all. And also, I think this is a very good space to talk. And I want to thank you again for the opportunity. I mean, I do not want to feel petty or anything, but it feels like we are not seen. By the Magic community, not only Wizards, but by the Magic community, it feels like we aren't heard. It feels like we are not part of it. We are our own group here, our own community, and we only have ourselves. We do not have any Latin America representative on the CAG or on the Commander community. Of course, I miss Sheldon. I was a very good friend of him. We talked about this a lot. I'm not sure how things are running now with the RC and the CAG, but I seem to hear less from what I was discussing back then. So it feels like I mean, things are going to change. Things aren't going to change. So this is the impression. Things aren't going to change for the Brazilian community on the Wizard support. Things aren't going to change on the community being part of something greater, of being heard in the Commander sphere, being heard with Wizards of the Coast, being heard locally because we do not have anyone to hear us. So it's very disappointing. It's very disappointing.
Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. And I guess even like the one like representation that Brazil really had like on the Magic stage would be like in recent memory was like PVDDR, and he's retired. He's working on games now.
Yeah. I mean, he was like we call him Pelé of Magic. Do you know Pelé?
Oh, Pelé. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We call him the Pelé of Magic.
That's okay.
Because
that's
we yeah. have high praises for PVDDR. But what we have now, to say we do not have anything, we have a content creator, which is called Alexandre Weber. And he's huge here for Pauper. And he is member of the Pauper Rules Committee or the Pauper group together with Gavin Verhey and some other. So this is what we have. And I feel like it's very little. I feel like it's very little compared to player base here in Brazil.
People don't get it because, like, here in the U.S., it's like people complain that there's only been like three major events on the East Coast of the U.S. this year. Oh no, we only have three major events within 3 hours of driving distance. The humanity.
Yeah. There's also one thing to consider. I'm not sure if this was what I was going to say, but there's also one thing to consider. Is the difference between the economies for both countries.
Yes.
So I can see, I will say from my point of view, it might not be true for everyone, but it seems easier for you to travel miles and miles to visit, to go to another event, to go to another tournament or anything. It seems easier. While you're here in Brazil, economy wise, it's not that easier. It's not that easy to do that. So this is why the online tournaments have been a huge success, because we can gather everyone in one place. But yeah, this is also another point that is very impactful on the community.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I know that's like kind of part of the excuse that like Wizards offered up as to why they're cutting support for Portuguese. Like, I know there's some amount of like pretty heavy tariffs or whatever that makes stuff end up being more expensive, but still, it's just disappointing. Yeah. It just sucks.
And now I remember what I was going to say. It's regarding the products. You mentioned the data. They say that they have data that the products, the Brazilian people buy more products in English because they are mostly available in English, because the distribution system is not good, and because we always have delays on pre-releases, we always have delays on new products coming to Brazil. Of course, I'm not putting everything on Wizards. But if we only have products in English, of course we'll buy products.
Of course, you'll buy more products in English.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that is going back to what you said earlier. It is very interesting to me what you said about you're not like worried about the current player base of Magic, because incidentally, many of them speak some amount of English. Probably because a lot of the cards available that you can play are in English. So therefore it self selects to people who can read English. But yeah, do you think then that like this is going to stop major growth of Magic in Brazil in the future? Because like people who only speak Portuguese, which like, I think earlier you were like, oh, we're working on speaking more English here. Yeah, I get it. But like, also you speak Portuguese in Brazil because that's what the language that people speak in Brazil, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's perfectly reasonable that people would want to have Portuguese cards in their, you know, cards in their first language. Would you say that is kind of like, by self-selecting to people who can already read English, and especially like, I imagine even if someone is relatively familiar with reading English and stuff, there's a lot of like random ass words on Magic the Gathering for cards, sure, which makes that grokking even harder. Do you think that's kind of, this could signal the end of some meaningful growth of the game in Brazil?
For sure. I think, as I mentioned, for the current player base, it might not be a. It is a problem. I'm not trying to say it is not a problem. It is a problem, but it's less. It's a lesser problem than for the player base that could have been the player base that could be here in the next 5 years, the next 10 years. So, yeah, for sure. And it's not like that we okay, so we need a magic in every language. Of course, it would be great. It would be great. But the problem is that we did have in Portuguese. And they decided that they don't want to make more products in Portuguese.
Like you had it, and then they are now taking it away.
Yes. Yeah. It's not like, oh, all right, people in Egypt, they need cards in Egyptian. Of course, if that makes sense, it would be great for the Egyptian community. I don't know. But we did have cards in Portuguese. Why did they take this from us? So this is the frustration. This is the frustration.
Yeah. And I think it's a frustration like right now in a lot of different parts of the world, because this is not the first time they've like cut languages from Magic in the last couple of years, which just sucks. Like they're cutting Chinese Simplified right now, which chops off the game from the entirety of the continent of China at this point. They already cut Chinese Traditional. They're cutting Russian, but I mean, who cares? I mean,
yeah,
that was a joke. But it's not a great trend. You know, I think the English centric nature of the game and how the game is supported has always been much, much more of a like bug than a feature. You know, it's like something that is not ideal in any ways. And I really hate to see them like actually continually reinforcing going in that direction rather than like,
and
expanding.
Yeah. And we know it's a business. We know
it's a business.
Yeah. We know they need to profit. But it's not like they do not profit from the game, which is why we are saying they are being greedy. This is why we are telling them that they are being greedy, because they do profit. Wizards of the Coast is one of the most profitable brands for Hasbro, if I'm not wrong.
Pretty much the entire profit line of Hasbro at this point.
So they are profiting. The game is growing. There are a bunch of discussions that do not concern only the Brazilian community, like the products, schedule, and everything. Okay, I understand. But do you need to cut your costs at this point? Would it be better for you if like only people that speak English play the game? Would this make you profit more? Or does, I mean, I'm not sure if the answer is easy, but of course it impacts on how your brand, how your product is seen.
Yeah, like not only at this point, like for Brazil, not only is Wizards of the Coast like removing a language in which people would love to play the game and actively are fluent in and would prefer to have, but they're also like actively pissing off the existing user base at the same time that they're alienating a new one. So it's like a double whammy, tough business decision.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think this is another one of those things that could be chalked up to something that seems to drive a lot of business decisions these days, which is like the pursuit of short-term profits at the expense of potential long-term growth. Like, by saying, "Oh, Brazil's, you know, Portuguese," I keep saying like Brazil, but you know, producing Portuguese cards is getting more and more expensive. Oh, we're not making as much money as we like, so we're going to stop doing Portuguese. Well, then you're cutting off growth in an entire country, much the same as they're now cutting off growth in the entirety of China. And I believe they've got rid of Korean in the past too. So they cut off all potential growth there beyond fluent English speakers who would like to play a card game in English. So Deco, we've been going for like almost 40 minutes now, which is about as long as I try to make these go, because there's another half of the podcast too. Before we sign off, is there anything else you would like to make sure you communicate to the listeners of
the Herald's Horn.
Yeah, that's sure. So, I think what is the message here is that Magic is not a game only for Americans, only for North Americans, only for European. It's a game played worldwide. We also just had, just remembering something that hurt a lot of CDH players in Brazil. It was like, okay, now we have a world championship of CDH. Okay, but only if you can travel to Europe.
Yeah. I couldn't even travel there.
Yeah.
And I'm in the US.
Yeah. Of course, shout out to Ken that won that event. He does not have like anything to do with that. We talked about that. I love Ken. Ken is a great person. But yeah, this kind of stuff hurts because, all right, if you are poor, if you cannot travel to Europe, you cannot play. Okay, I could travel to Europe. I just needed to sell my deck. And if I sold my deck, I could go to the event.
You couldn't play.
Yes.
You could come hang out for a couple, I'm sure, quite fun days, but then you couldn't play Magic anymore.
Exactly. But so, yeah, this kind of thing hurts. The messages we hear from the unspoken messages we hear from Wizards and the spoken messages we hear from Wizards, they are not good for the South Hemisphere of the world. I will not say only Brazil, but for the South Hemisphere of the world. I mean, we have pretty much no support. We don't have anyone to talk to. So these things, they accumulate. The frustration accumulates. And this is why the Brazilian community literally screamed to Wizards, hey, you are being greedy. Hey, you are upsetting us. So, yeah, I wish that we could be part of the community, worldwide speaking, because we are part of our own community only. We are not part of the worldwide Magic the Gathering community. And this is the feeling. I wish we could do more. We have Alexandre Weber on the Pauper committee. So why can't we have like someone on the CAG? It doesn't have to be from Brazil. Someone from Latin America or someone from different, someone who is not from Europe or North America. Okay, because we only see, okay, so the player base is larger there. Okay, yes, it's larger, but it doesn't mean that we do not have a huge player base here. The largest commander event in the world was organized in Brazil. So why do you not want to hear what the Brazilians have to say? So this is what the main message is. We want to be seen. We want to be heard. We want to have more support. And we currently don't. So this is why we are frustrated.
Well, I can't say it anything better than that, obviously, myself. So, Deco, thank you for joining me. Thank you for talking to me about this.
And thank you for hearing me complain about this stuff. Of course. It's very frustrating, but thanks for the time. This is very important to me. I was very excited when you first invited me because this is a huge opportunity for the Americans or whoever listens to your podcast to know what's going on, to know why the Brazilians are angry, to know what are the frustrations, what's the situation. I ask for a little bit of empathy from whoever is listening because, I mean, we are the ones being impacted by Wizards' decisions.
Deco of CDH Brazil, thank you for joining me on this episode.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Herald's Horn. If you liked what you heard, consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you've really enjoyed listening, you can support us directly on Patreon. I'll even send you a sticker in the mail. Every little bit helps us make the best podcast we can for you. Check out the link in the podcast description. Herald's Horn is hosted, edited, and produced by me, Cal Jones. The co-hosts are Emma Partlow, Lexi, better known as Black Girl Mage, and Dan, better known as Moderately Anonymous MTG. All of our info also lives in the podcast description. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Harold's Horn and any place else you can find us too. If you want to reach out to me about the podcast, hit up editorial@haroldshorn.com. I'd love to see your email. Thanks again for listening to the Harold's Horn. We're having so much fun creating it. See you in 2 weeks.
I'm excited to get Disdainful Stroke. I'm a huge Disdainful Stroke fan in general.
Yeah, so. You love D-stroking?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed Disdainful Stroke. Something about...
Do you like D-stroking?
You know, I've also always really been a fan.